Yeah, okay. So Shmuel's question is about what's the deal with counting people, counting Jews, counting people, not counting people. What's the reason, I guess, and what's the scope? So, I don't know, that's a lot of questions, but it's just, it comes from, there is a sugya, believe it or not. And it's halacha, and it's midu musaf and dalet hay. Maybe even it starts. Ketzer mefaisen. How do you do the pius? They have like a lottery to decide which Cohen's going to get the job. Okay? A lot of different jobs in the given in the mikdash. So how you can decide who does it? So you have like a pius. You have some sort of lottery. How do you do it? On the mehekef, you stand in a circle. Maskim ma'minyan shimonim. And you agree to some ket number. Mea, O'elef, O'kolminyan shimonim. They agree to some number. 100, 1,000, whatever they want. U'memuna omer lahem etzbiu. Okay, so, and everyone, the guy says, you know, put out your fingers or something. I don't know exactly what the word means. Shoot. Mehem motzien etzbosem achas ashlayim. And you put out your fingers, one or two. It's an old game, right? Vim hotzi shalosh, and if a guy puts out three, one in lo shalosh. Then they can even count three. Vim motzien godel b'mikdash, m'nehar amayim. You can't use your thumb. No thumbs allowed. Because it's triggers. Because it's easy for a guy to slowly put it in and put it out. Who are good at math, they're like counting fingers, you know? Like the card counting is like the finger counting. They're able to just sneak it in or out. So I guess other fingers will be clear that a guy's doing it. But the thumb, next thing you know, whoop, where'd my thumb go? You know? You thought I had three? Yeah.
Can you put out four or five?
I don't know. It's funny. It says you do one or two, but if you do three, that's also okay. Funny, right?
That's funny.
V'hamotze godel, emono asalo. Even if you put it out, it doesn't count.
The thumb doesn't count?
We don't count the thumb. Emonim osolo. Yeah, it sounds like we don't count the thumb. Even if you try to put out a thumb, we're not going to count it.
This is for what exactly?
This is for different jobs in the mikdash. There's like this different family who's working in the avodah. But in the mikdash, who gets to do the different jobs?
Why are they putting out?
So you guess a number, and then
you have to have a way.
So whoever gets the number,
who guesses the number?
Each coin guesses the number. Yeah, each coin guesses the number, and then you do the finger game.
There's a lot of avodas in the mikdash.
Everybody picks just one number. That's so you know when you 21st finger,
that makes sense.
They just pick a random number.
Yeah, no, 21st, otherwise you can calculate. So they have a number that's very high, I guess, and you're not going to be able to predict it. There's enough people standing around in a circle.
Right.
Right?
Whoever hand it lands on, that's the guy.
Well, then he says this. So then he starts from the guy who pulls his hat off first. That guy, who I guess who pulls his hat off, he's the guy. Sounds like it was known, which is the guy he's going to count from, the guy who pulls his hat off first. They had a whole, you know, they had a whole ceremony. Yeah, this is done. Umona Allah is Boseahem. They count their fingers. Bechozer Chalila, and they go in a circle. Achi Yashal, Mamin, Shiskimolov. Vahisha Shilim Aminyan, Etzalot Bao. And the person at the end, near him, who Shiatsa Bapai is Rishon Lavoda. So he's the guy who they count to do first. He goes first in Lavoda. Okay? And then I think maybe it goes the guy who's next to him, the guy who's next to him, I think it just goes, that's the way it goes from there on it. I don't think you keep doing it a million times. He just starts from him, and then, you know. Okay, I think. Yeah, 13th guy, I think so. Then he says, "V'lama monim ha'minyan just kimo al etzbo shows you." Why they do the fingers? "V'loyim monim al ha'nashmasim." Why not just count the people? Which is hard to understand because this game isn't going to work if it's the people. Because anyone who knows math is going to be able to figure it out, right?
Yeah, it's just one. It's not.
Yeah, it's not one. It's the fact that you have the numbers one or two is what, or three is what makes it. But randomizes it. If you know, you'll just see that there's 70 people there, and you know the number is, everyone will fight, everyone number will be. You know, but the fact that it's random, and you could put out a one or a two, there's no way you could do that. Right?
I mean, how does it work, though? Let's say,
You don't know the
number beforehand?
No, seems like they do. Seems like they know the number beforehand. But you don't know what number everyone else is going to put up, so it could be, at least if it's two or one, it could be double. You go all the way from, let's say, 100 to 200.
So, and anywhere in between.
And the number could be 500, or, you know, I guess the number, you pick a big enough number so that it will make it, still agree a number, which is not going to be able to predict it. Right. I guess if the number is big enough, it's not, you're not going to be able to have an edge. But if it's just the number of people, if it's only one, then you'll just pick a number based on your eyeball how many people it is, and you'll stand in the right place. It just doesn't seem like it's going to work. So I don't see this question altogether. What do you mean, why don't you count people? The game doesn't work with people. Okay. It's funny.
Is that a Gemara?
Yeah, probably. It's interesting. It seems like you need one or two. Maybe that's the thing. Is if you want to do three, you do three. But like you need one or two, I would have said. Forget this round for a second. I'd say you need one or two because you have to have those two options. That's what allows it to be random. Allows it to be a fair game. But there's nothing against three. It's just like the halacha is that you have to tell them your choices are one or two.
There's no point to three, really.
What? Yeah.
Just wasting time, because
yeah.
One or two
randomizers. Yeah, right, exactly. One or two randomizers, there's no point to it. But it's not like, if a guy wants to do it, we'll count three if you want to. It's not like, again, it's not an isser of three, it's just you has to be one or two. So that's halacha. You're right. It's like cut to the chase, you know, there's just no point. You're just going to waste time. Yeah. Okay. Fine. And then, so why don't they just count people? The fish also limnos as Israel, Elide the Racher. Because you're not allowed to count the Jews, but through some intermediate means. Shnemavayev Kedem Batalim. They counted them by the sheaf. I think Batalim, Shmuel Aleph, that's about Dalit.
Okay. You said the Matzah
Shekel. Yeah, like Matzah Shekel they use. Yeah. And there's that story where David HaMelech had a Magefa because he counted the people. They told him he wanted to count. They said, don't do it. He says, no. And he did it. Then he ended up getting punished for that. Magefa was like, it was bad. I don't think that's this story, though. We forget about the line. But that's halacha, that you can count Yisrael but by something else. It's Yisrael. Is that a Gemara? Let's see. I think it is a Gemara. I once went through this thing.
That's all he says. That it
doesn't. Yep. Wow. Yeah, no, it's very short, right? You'd like him to say a little bit more than that.
You classifying it as an Isser?
Usser. You know, I'm not sure what Usser means exactly, but that's what he says. It's interesting. Tshuvas Rabbeinu Be'inyan HaPayas. Sounds like there's a whole tshuva. Eicha Yapas Nekayom Be'inyan Kibyon Shai Salaminyan Mahayadu Be'im Niyasa Osan Nashim Niyasa Osan Tzvos. Amram
has a tshuva?
Yeah, it seems like it's a long tshuva here. It says She'ela. Chach Meit Tzor HaTalmud HaRafayim. Eicha Yapas Nekayom Be'inyan Kohanim. Eicha Yamon Osan Muna Hadirgam. But so it's supposed to say, Kibun Shahisal Minyan, since it was a count, Mahavil Baim and Yasuas Anashim, Ubaim and Yasuas Azbos, what's the difference if they count the people or they count the fingers? Mahiha Ramah Shechoshimla. What's this Ramah? It's Lamisha Hoti Shtaim Azbos, or Shalosh, Ubihara Godel, what's the special thing about the thumb? Vahim Yimnu Rak Be'echad, Ma'alam Azel, let's say you just count that as one. What's the problem? Wow.
So he addresses the question also, why...
What's their question? Right. They're just asking, what's the whole deal? How's it done? What's this Ramos you're worried about? What's the whole problem?
Right. It just sounds like the other way of doing it is just quick random numbers, and then you'll count up to that number with the people, and you'll pick that person.
Mm-hmm. The guy in the separate room.
Yeah, exactly. Pick a bunch of random numbers. There's another order of people, and that's it. And you count up the people. See which number it hits.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit of a long tshuva. Not sure if I'm going to go through it. I haven't really looked at it. I have no idea if it's good or bad or nothing. But, he has a little bit here. That's in my account thing. Yeah. If you want, I can tell you what I was thinking. And, the tshuva looks interesting, but maybe I should go through it before I make sure it's, because we're just going to read through the facts and not really get anywhere, you know. But I'll tell you my initial thought I had. I mean, I have to remember, maybe I can develop it more. But it was something like that I mean, the key is there. I mean, I think you have to look at the keys there by double amount, because there was like a chet that he counted them. And there's like a negef with kodosam, you know, if you count people. So I think part of the idea is like a person could take power, security in the numbers. That's what double amount seemingly was trying to do. It's like a person feels insecure, so it's just like a general. You say we're 1,000 strong or 100,000 strong. It's like there's a certain impressiveness about numbers, you know? And that's the idea of why a person would, in theory, a general would want to count. That's like a model case of the general. Or, you see how many people you have, and you feel pride, and you feel like, look at us, we're a big group, we're looking at how many people, you know? And I think the idea is that in Klal Yisrael, it's not, we hold, is that the essence of a person, you really shouldn't take a, there's two things, like, we're not about the numbers. Like, you see, for instance, Klal Yisrael won many, many battles that we are highly outnumbered, right? Because essentially the power is with Hashgacha, and we're like a metaphysical reality, and the numbers are not what it's about. And so far as we're they say, we're Shema Yisrael. If you only have this list of this mitzvah Shema Yisrael, then God will say, oh, but thank you. So insofar as you're living properly, then Klal Yisrael will have a Hashgacha. And so far as you want not, then you're not. And we're not the biggest nation, but we're under the Hashgacha. So it's like to relate, you can't relate to Klal Yisrael's power and their like existence just like in a quantitative way. They're like a qualitative entity, Klal Yisrael. So like, although yes, there is a practicality to counting people or Arminian or whatever, but like it could be when you do it all day to Barachar, so you remember that idea. So it brings to mind the idea that look, practically we have to count, but it's like you don't partake of that emotion and don't relate to the people in that way. As if, like, taking pride in the number. Taking pride in the group, or, I mean, there's a thing, let's see, counting people, you think, look, we're a certain amount of people, so, it's and I guess you want to reflect this idea that Klal Yisrael's significance is not in the, you know, it's not a quantitative thing, but it's in the shame of Klal, you know, in the shame of Klal, in the shame of Yisrael. Something like that. Yeah. So, but I know there are sources, I remember, I looked into it, it was kind of like what I remember, the main punchline of the whole, you know, the analysis. But you look at the, I think that, so I think that was the route I took, because I knew that was the case of the model where he really was punished for. It was bad. So, you know, that case, like, could be insightful into the thing. So I'd look at these, if you want to look into it, maybe I will again, but I'd look at the sources in this Rambam, you know, and the story of David, find that, it's not quoted there, but it's easy enough to track down. What? Dalada. Uh-huh. And he quotes basically about Talayim, but I'm sure there's a Gemara here. I didn't see notes gonna bring the Gemara, but I'm sure it's a Gemara. Ram didn't make this up. You know.
It's a funny thing though, because those cases, first of all, they're on like a national scale.
Yes, I know.
And also it's that there's no purpose other than to know how many there are.
Right.
But like today, in a practical situation, you just want to know if you have enough people to get together the minyan.
I know. I guess you could look into where it applies, where it doesn't apply. It says it's Chaf Beis and Mabez. I'm not sure where. Probably, here it is. Chaf Beis and Mabez. I'm just not sure on the Sechta. Sham. Oh, yeah, Chaf Beis. Yeah, Maria, I'm getting there. Beis, meh. You know these games where you get Sham all the way back to who knows where? Yuma, I think. Looks like it's Chaf Beis and Mabez and Yuma.
Yeah, the Shams are
good. Yeah, the Shams.
Should have a cutoff point for the
show. Yeah,
every 5.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks interesting. It looks like it would be an interesting combination of the sugi itself, first of all, about this finger counting. It's like, a, you know, and this other thing that comes up with this, the philosophical idea, which might be halachic, and to know the parameters. Like, it would be a nice little thing to look into, you know? I think I did it years ago. But I don't really remember so much. I don't think I really went into the finger, the 21st finger thing, though.
The
Tshuva, it's called the Tshuva. The Tshuva looks really cool, also. They just asked them to explain to us everything about the Vias, basically, you know? Yeah. They have it now, they call it. Did you guys, the New York kids, the 21st finger, is it?
Of course.
Now I think they have something called, like, yellow shoe. I am not it, or something like that.
I knew I was wearing a yellow shoe.
Yellow shoe, red shoe, something like that. Yeah.
Very easy.
Yeah.
It's like you open your feet in and you count and you know, something like
oh,
that.
Oh, I played that
You
game.
See how the kids would play it. Yeah, I know Gavi, I saw the Gavi playing it once. Yeah. Something like that, right? Yeah, it's different versions of it. You know, this is like an old game, you know? It's funny. But they're smarter than us, because 21st finger is it, you know?
Right, yeah.
It wasn't, until it was 21st. I do remember as a kid trying to use math tricks to be able to win that, you know? I don't know what I did exactly. I figured out. Yeah, something like that. I just remember, like I just remember thinking, like, I had an advantage of that game, you know?
Yeah. Let's play 21st.
Yeah. Usually win.
I don't remember. I just remember trying to figure it out. I don't know if I ever figured it out. I just remember trying to figure it out, you know? Like, I remember I used to play Chumash baseball. Did you guys used to play that game? It's like you open up the Chumash, and you could turn pages. You could say, I'll turn three forward. And if you land on, like, the end of a parsha, Chazak, you get, like, 500 points. The upside down nun, Valisli, you get, like, 1,000 points. And, like, the, you know... And like a pay, you get a certain amount. There's always a certain amount of points for everyone. So I knew that the upside down moon was like on page 33 in Bamidbar, something like that. And I'd always just have to open up to Bamidbar, and then in my head I'd quickly calculate how many pages, and then I'd be able to just go to it, you know. So I'd always win. I'd get like 1,000 just in a row. And my friend who wasn't like a math, he'd be like, oh, I'd take like turn 37 backwards. Yeah, you get to say how many pages you want to turn, you know? Yeah, you have to pick. So I just knew that I knew what page it was on, because it changes in between Sparim. So Bamidbar, like, and I had it. That was a skill. I had to open up to Bamidbar. But once I was in Bamidbar, then I was good, you know?
You didn't catch on to this?
I don't know. I don't think
you switched it up. Switched it up a lot.
Sometimes
I don't know, you know, I'm not really sure. I don't think I ever told him.
That's hard to do in different.
You should tell him now. He would be very different.
No, you can't do it if it's out of my trick wouldn't work. I mean, you could, but I never figured it out. Oh, it was a Chumash Chumash Torah.
Right.
That, but the way they work is they start the numbers to count again at each sefer. You know? So, like, if I'd open up on page 37 of Vayikra, I'd have to be able to calculate how many pages are in Vayikra, you know? I guess I was good enough at getting it into Bamidbar that I wouldn't have to figure out that trick, you know? It's not that hard. I mean, you know where you can get Bamidbar. It's pretty big, and you know.
And you have 1 in 5 chance, even if you were just to do it.
Yeah, right. Maybe every so often I throw a bone and just like turn into Vayikra and just, you know.
And then calculate how many pages till the beginning and then from there.
I remember those were the days. Yeah. Chumash baseball. I think that's what you call that. Chumash baseball. I don't know why I was baseball. I didn't have anything to do with baseball.
I know. This is the trying to figure that out. You're like 500 points and like, yeah. That's a high score.
Yeah, okay. So, any other questions?
Kind of general, kind of big, but
okay. Maybe I'll give a general big answer.
I'm good with that. How do we of the Masora, if we see situations of clear mistakes, like, you know, we see a situation of a mistake in the discrepancies in different Torahs that we have now, and we see that things just were not transmitted correctly. Generations, things just got lost. And how do we view the whole Kliyut Masorah, knowing that we have mistakes that happen?
It
kind of seems like you view the Masorah as infallible.
Like what mistakes are you referring to?
At least the ones that I've heard of, like, I don't know, gloves are missing, or...
Well, like, things like that.
Yeah, stuff like that. I don't know, maybe you have a word that's missing. I have no idea, I just don't know. I'm not a historian on this, but...
Well, the question is presuming a kind of historical knowledge that... It's not really a question if you don't really have any,
I do definitely know that we have mistakes with the, you know, with bugs.
Do you mean just in the Torah itself?
At least in the Torah itself, yeah.
Lisa?
Yeah, like
when you get a chance, can you grab me a AAA battery?
The one that was given to us.
Yeah. You know, it's the better, my potato cord's going to go very soon.
Like, also, let's say in the Torah Shabbat Pet, too, like Sam's mentioning. Like, we don't have. Definitely don't have the
kosher bandicoot.
Right. Right.
Isn't that problematic? Okay, I get the idea that, oh yeah, it's not really the film that we're going for. It. That I've heard before, and then okay. But doesn't that reflect on the home sower? Isn't that like bad? Or maybe it doesn't, but how does that affect our view of the validity of the sower? It seems like things are just lost. Like things are just not passed down correctly. What happened? I thought we had a weak view of the sower as kind of valuable to those things.
Well, I mean, in terms of Torah Shavuot Sav, I mean, I think Torah Shavuot Sav and Torah Shavuot Per are somewhat different questions. So in Torah Shavuot Sav, I think there's a very big thing about maintaining the integrity of Torah Shavuot Sav. It is like the Eidos, it's that which we have from God, as the, you know, the Dvar Hashem. And to my knowledge, I mean, if there are differences between Torahs, they're very, very minor. I mean, yeah, like vavs and stuff, or maybe there's like a question, I don't even know, there's an psichol or stuma, I don't really know all the particulars of the thing, but I think they're very, very small differences, if at all. You know, because the way the Torah is, first of all, I think the halacha is when you write a Torah, you have to write it, copy it from another Sefer Torah. So you can't like write a Torah from memory or something, you know. So it always has to be recorded. It's like set up in a way. Yeah, so it's like set up in a way that's gonna like it protects itself, you know. So, and it's like a mitzvah for everyone to write a Torah, you know. So not everyone does that, you know. Certainly not. But it's like it's the kind of thing like there's throughout our history. There's always been people, you know, there's been Torahs here and there. You know, I mean, there are times of persecution where, you know, they've probably been less frequent and less common, you know, types of things. But in general, I think the overwhelming majority of Torahs are almost, if not identical, are almost identical, you know? Which is probably not that common a thing, especially with before computers and printing press and like that, you know, for things to be so uniform. Because then the way it's set up, as how you know, you can only write it in that type of a restricted manner. So, I mean, I guess to really ask a kasha, you'd have to, you know, show like serious discrepancies or whatever. Like, I don't know. There's like above an extra above or whatever, it doesn't really, you know. I see that kind of thing. People, I don't know, somehow it's lost over time or whatever. Or, you know, they say we're not Bekim Mechzeh Shizeros. The Gemara say that. You know. Because that's what they say. They say the letter Gachon, the Vav of Gachon, is the middle letter of the Torah. It just says the Lomanikr. Did I tell you about this? I think so, no? It says Lomanikr Shemo Sofrim. Why do they call them Sofrim? Is like Medivri Sofrim, you know, sometimes you call the Rabbanu Medivri Sofrim. So why they call it Sofrim? Sofrim means counters. So it's because they spend their time, they counted, used to count the words and letters of the Torah. Like they say, the Vav of Gachon is the middle letter, and this is the middle word, and they know, you know, they had these things down. So it's like a funny thing. Why they do that? And look, that's what you're calling them? Like, why, that's a funny thing to call them. You know, that you're calling them Sofrim because he used to do that. Like, why would they do that? It sounds like, you know, so I'm just saying, it's like, first of all, it sounds like painstaking labor to count the words of the Torah. It says in Kotzei Gemara, Gemara says, Lo zazu misham ad shehotzi sefer Torah umenon. It says they didn't move. They had apparently some dispute and did not leave the Beis Medrash until they, like, brought out a Torah and they, like, literally counted it. You know? So I wanted to say is, pshat is that it is foremost in for the Mesorah to the maintenance of the Torah Shavuot Sav. You know, exactly. You know, exactly. Makes that maintenance of the Torah Shavuot Sav. Make sure that its integrity is maintained. It doesn't lend itself to forgeries and any of that. So the way they did that was with these types of things. If you know the exact middle of the Torah, then if anyone tries to forge it, you'll catch them. You know, if you ever have two Torahs and they're not sure which is the legitimate, which is the fake one, so you'll say, well, let's check the middle of the phone. You know, let's make it, check it out, see if it's right. You know, so it kind of protects. They had like protection things in it. And it says is that, like, given that they recognize that importance of that, so they did something which is like very, very tedious work, even on the spot. They just stopped their doing and did it because they recognized that as so significant, and they were willing to, like, moser and nefesh for a thinker to do like activities like that is like very, you know, anyone to do it. It's like a hard work to do something like that, you know. But because of the fact they recognized that, so they were committed to the maintenance of the Mesorah. So that's what it's like, Nikon Shon Sofrim. It's like an action which points to their Messiah's Nefesh for the maintenance of the integrity of the Torah. You know? But they say that even despite that, they say nowadays, and the Gemara says, so it has a question, so why not count it? So it says that we are not experts in Chaseros and Yeseros, the Vavs and the whatever, so you can't do it anymore. You know, so you see though that apparently it was lost, the exact precision that they used to have. But despite that, it's just Chaseros and Yeseros. I don't think there's any, you know, there's like isolated questions. I remember, I think when Yeshiva and Rebbe, I think Rebbe was writing a Torah recently, a few years back. Someone commissioned the writing of a Torah to like for Rebbe to write it however he wanted to, you know. So I think they basically looked into all the different shilas. You know, there's certain machloksim, certain small things, like above here or this there. I don't know all the shilas, but it came down to like 5 or 10 machloksim questions, I think, that they had to just make decisions on. But I think there are just certain things I'm not sure about. A few things. I don't know how significant the differences are, though. I don't think they're big. But, yeah. So that's that, you know. So I don't think that really calls into question the Torah because there's a letter off or whatever. I mean, if you had significant psukim off or ideas off or differences or whatever, that would be a question. But, you know, for how the book that's 3,000 or whatever years old, you know, to have a letter of Vav or whatever is, you know, despite all the different persecutions, all different than that, it's like, yeah, and no, the ideas I think are all 100%. I don't think it really changes the ideas and the basic. So that's that. Yeah, Torah Shmal Peh is different. I mean, look, Torah Shmal Sav is the very text itself is significant, and every word is significant, and that's like, that's why the Torah Shmal Sav is so important to maintain the thing. So you're dying from the words and the grammar, and it's written like it's meant to be Nidrash, and you can't just throw out words or letters, it throws things off, like an extra Vav. In theory, you have Limudim based upon Vavs. So it's like the whole Torah Shmal Sav is—it's like every word is significant. But in Torah Shmal Peh, it's not that type of a thing. It's like a body of knowledge and a way of thinking about knowledge. And you can take a particular halacha out, and even if it was lost, it doesn't undermine the Masorah. There's halachas that could be lost, and you can have machlokes. So maybe you don't have a Masorah about a particular thing, and you have a machlokes about it. They lost a Masorah. If they lose a Masorah about a particular halacha, they have a machlokes. So maybe there's a Masorah exactly how to do tefillin, and then somehow they lost, and Rashi and Tam argued. So they have machlokas, and the system is determined al pi ra. You know, you have svaros, and you work it through, and you have certain basic principles which are from the Masorah. You have the methodology of how to learn or whatever from the Masorah, and, you know, and then it's like a living system that's determined by the Mori ra of each and every generation. So the basic Torah Shabbat Sav you have intact, the basic principles of the Torah Shabbat Peh you have intact. And particulars could be perhaps lost, or perhaps arguments, or, you know, things that we don't know, and we have to trace down, and we have to argue, you know, argue about it and work it out with Svara. But that's the nature of the system, is that it lends itself to growth, you know, through the different volumes of Svara. Yeah. We have methods of working with Svekos and things which we don't know. And then that's that point, that we're not looking for Rosh Ben Tfilin, so therefore we're just looking at Tfilin of the system, and the system, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard Rebbe say one time on a tape like a very similar thing that, I mean, yeah, we have a machlokas about how the tefillin should look, but no one argues that we have tefillin.
Right.
I mean, we have the majority and the main body of the Torah Shabbat.
Uh-huh. Right. It's true. Right. Yeah, they're details, largely details. You know, and even where there are, yeah, right, we have tefillin and we have some shayat and some shorosh and, you know, I mean, look, certain sugyas are bigger machlokas than others, but essentially, you know, there's a lot that, you know, people like to say everything's machlokas. But not really. It's an exaggeration. You know? You don't realize how much is given and is agreed upon.
So if we have the basics of Torah Shabbat Peh kind
of
like the rest of Makhlouk and, you know, Svekos and stuff like that, what's the importance of maintaining Torah Shabbat? Is that just for like drushas? Because we can still be going.
Well,
we just sounds like we have all Torah and just pass down the
So it was, I mean, there's different things. One thing is like, that's the Eidos. Like the book, which is passed down generation, is like part of the whole Prophet of Sinai rests on the book of the Torah.
Do we know the Eidos really just the
words? I mean, I think it's the fact that you have a book which says in it that all these things happen and it was passed down from generation. This very book, which is falsifiable at any point, no one could introduce the book. If you had the book and there was many contradictory versions of the thing, then you think it's just introduced at some later point. The fact that it's like a singular recounting of this history, which is found all over the place and all Jews all over, and it's been passed down for all the generations, is what indicates that this true story wasn't just introduced at some later point.
It's not just the claim. Isn't the claim the crux of it?
Without a book?
Yeah.
But the claim would be different. Everyone's claim might be a tiny bit different. I mean, the uniformity of the claim is through the book.
But don't we have a uniform claim?
Because we have the book.
Because of the book?
Yeah, we have a uniform. Our claim is exactly what it says in Shinos, whatever.
Okay.
That's our claim. If there's no book, it would just be like oral transmissions. I don't know if it would be so uniform, and there'd be no way of testing that it's uniform. How would you know?
It just becomes whatever.
It's like telephone. But here you have a book that makes it into one uniform thing.
Right. It's interesting that the content is not, it's like not on par exactly with the Torah Shebaal Peh. And a lot of the things, in fact, if you didn't darshan them, you would be like the Quran, basically.
Mm-hmm. It's true. But the Torah also of itself indicates that there is a Torah Shebaal Peh. So it's like interesting. It's like it's not that saying the depth of our system is in Torah Shebaal Peh, but it's saying it's important that you need a Torah Shebaal Peh. But Torah Shebaal Peh tells you that there's Torah Shebaal Peh and Yirat HaChacham, and you know, so it's like it's a dual system.
Right.
On the one hand, Torah Shebaal Peh. And there's also a value to like having a book which is Dvar Hashem. I think there's something to that. Like there's a difference when you learn Torah Shebaal Peh and when Torah Shebaal Peh. It's like it's in Limud Torah itself. You know that this word itself is like is Dvar Hashem. It's like a different type of a Limud. It almost like Lahavdil. Lahavdil is if you read the Rambam in the Modern Bucham versus the Rambam Mishnah Torah. So Rambam Modern Bucham is a translation. He didn't write it in Hebrew. Yeah. And it's annoying that he didn't, because the Rambam is a very, very excellent writer, and you know that he wrote the words. You know, he's a very clear writer, easy writer, and you can be medayik, the Rambam's lashon. But you can't be medayik, the Amar Vuchim, because he didn't write it, and it's a translation. So you'd like to hear him say it, what he's trying to say. You know, there's something to knowing this is the way the Rambam wrote it in the Mishnah Torah, this is the words he used, then you can figure out what he'd let him talk to you. You know, you can't let him talk to you when it's a translation. You know? So, in the Havdil, but, you know, when there's the value of having a book which was written by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you could just learn it. I mean, it's amazing. This is what God wrote, and you could see this is the word of God. That's like, first of all, I think it moves the person emotionally. It could connect you to God and to the reality of Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's part of the Eidos that God is with us, and God gave us a book like that, and you know, and intellectually, I know there's some like a value, a person is like a different type of a limud, where you know, and you see the fact that every word is measured, and you know the infinite chachma, and every single, you know, it's, I don't know, there's some like, it's a different type of a study, different type of an involvement, than Torah Shebaal Peh. Yeah, something like that. It's a different facet of Talmud Torah, you know? And I think it moves the person in a different type of way also. I think it strengthens Torah Shebaal Peh that you have a book called Torah Shebaal Peh, which you know is the Word of God. You know, be Hashem direct with the, you know, it's Moshe Rabbeinu into our hands, and you know. Yeah.
So was Machlokas supposed to be part of the system, or is that something that happened?
I think it is. I mean, it depends what type of Machlokas. I don't know if it was supposed to be forgotten in enough to fill in details. I mean, although I think it lends itself to that, there are mechanisms built in that allow us to restore halachos based upon machlokesim. But I think there's, you know, that chazal. I have a share on it. It's a good one. But it's about you know, Elav Elav. Basically says, you know, that Gemara, it says that Hashem saw, Moshe saw Hashem writing something like 49 svaras of Heter and 49 svaras of Esther. So he said, what's all this stuff? What's the halacha? So he says, oh, these are for your offspring. You're going to have the svaras in both ways, you know? So something like that. And he says, I forget the whole back and forth. He says, I said, which one is it? And he says, Elav Elav Dibre Elokim Chayim. Which I think meant that the idea is that the system is meant to be a system of analysis and thinking, and like a living system where Chacham are using their minds. It's not just dogmatic. You take what it says, but you have to think and apply your minds to new situations which emerge. So it lends itself to that. That type of thing has to involve Machlokes. Because thinkers, you see, Moshe Aaron argued. You see, even the greatest thinkers are going to end up arguing. So that's, once it's a system, it's a system of mind, and once it's a system of mind, a system of thinkers, people are different, and you're going to have machlokesim. And the Torah is built to allow it to involve chacham and thinking. So it's not just like a blind, you know, just like a tape recorder doesn't write everything down. But I don't know if it's that we're supposed to forget things, it's just that there's always new cases, new things emerging. It's like a rich system with rich cases, all kinds of shailas which come up, and not everything is totally determined.
The rabbinic institutions. The Rav using like divrei sofrim when they're mechadesh things through
exactly that stuff. But I'm saying, but even in like, let's say the oraisa, let's say driving a car. So I mean, I don't think God told Moshe whether you drive a car or not. It's presumably based upon those new practical things that come up in the world, which have to apply. I mean, there's new shailas that come up. I don't know if every single shaila that ever came up is was given to Moshe and Sinai. Could be a shaila, which could be based upon a hintimsa of a guy does this to him and he cuts this, and, you know.
You're saying the Torah, meaning it doesn't have to be that something the Torah was forgotten or is changing for there to be
right.
Machlokas,
exactly.
Based on the phenomena
right.
That you have now.
Right. Like Machlokas by Aaron, whatever, is when Aaron's with a Kohen Gadol's makarbonin or something. The shaila came up, and whatever, so maybe a certain basic halachas, but then you have a case. So I don't know if every single case which had to come up and it'd be given to Hashem to Moshe. I don't think you have to say it's every case that could ever emerge, and a shaila may come up. Does that mean that case was already determined directly by the svara? You know, like Hashem told Moshe what would happen if so and so case happened. I mean, the basic halacha, what to do, but then there's like shailas. There's all kinds of nafkamina cases, which may happen. Let's say a shor is a muad for goring on his left side and on his right side. Then what happens? Do you have to say that Hashem told that to Moshe? I mean, that's a particular case, a particular shor, there's whatever, so I don't think you have to. I mean, the basic halacha, what a tam is, what a mur is, you know? But I don't know if, like, shailas, there's a million cases, half of Gemara's are hypothetical types of cases, which, you know, have nafkaminas, and it's going to be a difference, you know? So I don't know that that's, you know?
Are you saying specifically cases that are furtherances or extrapolations of the principles, or you saying even let's say we had Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillin, let's say we passed them, we have it, but like, I don't know, some posik sees learning the sugya a different way.
I mean, I don't know if it was meant to be like if you had a mesorah. Right, an asterisk is an asterisk. I don't know if it's meant to be, or a certain halacha is the way you wear its filling is like Rashi. I don't think if there was a Masorah from Moshe to Yeshua to this, that Rashi is the right way to make tefillin, then some posek says, you know what, I disagree. I don't know if they have like latitude to do something like that, to just argue on what the Masorah says about halacha if it's a clear cut Masorah.
There is a correct answer. Like what? I'm saying that's.
Yeah.
Presumably there was something that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu as the best, the most complete system.
In those things which are fixed.
Right.
Yes. Presumably he was given some sort of tefillin. His tefillin looked like something. Correct. But that's not the essence. But I guess presumably he had a pair of tefillin.
There's a saying the essence is really to
what?
To
use Chachma to and the methods of the Masora of Torah Shabbat path to be able to determine how to follow what the Torah says, how to wear the tefillin. Now, one of them is listen to Chachamim who tell you this is what the Masora is. Another method is if you don't have anything like that, so then you have to use different, you have to use other principles to be able to resolve the Safi. Well, how it goes. Yeah. Okay, good question.
Well, I have another slightly related thing.
Okay.
Like an offshoot. So what do you do when you come across, let's say, like, there's a whole halachic piece by, let's say, a Brisker Afram, but it's based on, like, a Ron Gerson. And I don't mean the first rip time, because I think it works out that the Gerson doesn't matter. But I think
I just came to that conclusion today also. Because
right.
I think he had it also, by the way. The Lacha Mishnah has that tshuva.
Right, the Lacha Mishnah had it.
So presumably Ruch Chaim had Lacha Mishnah, doesn't know.
But it's amazing because he doesn't mention it.
I know, but I think it's parenthetical to his point.
In the first one?
Yeah.
But does, in the second one, doesn't he talk about it a lot, the Ram Shita?
I don't know, I didn't do that one yet.
So I guess he needs the writer in the first one, because he's got to bring up...
Right, he needs the writer, but you don't think that
the
part...
The writer has his own Shita.
You're right, but I don't think. But his question isn't based upon that Gersa. His question is on the fact that the Ram puts in this halacha and whatever.
I was saying he needs the Raivid and the Raivid's going on the Ram.
Yeah, so right. Right, but he's not taking up the Raivid. At least that part. I don't think. I mean, I'm not that into the sugya, but it seemed to me that, you know. So Fishman originally told me this morning that it's, oh, you got a problem, it's based on Gersa or whatever, and that's always annoying. But I don't think. I think we concluded. You know, for now at least, that doesn't. I don't know. It's like when you heard "Does the Band"?
No, I was looking at it myself, and I saw he was going through the sheet of the Rama based on this thing.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it could be. I'll take because I was just glancing. At
I understand. So. Yeah, I know. But sometimes there is one. There is a Rav Chaim. I remember. I can't remember what it was, but it was like based on the wrong gear. So that's what you're talking about, right?
Right, let's say you did come across that. So
yeah,
do you just throw it out, or you say, let's go through it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We don't throw it. I mean, I know as an Rebbe Shira, he didn't throw it out. I'll tell you that. I mean, okay, at the very least, it's Reb Chaim's ideas.
Yeah.
You know? But I don't know. You know?
I mean, he probably wouldn't have said it if he knew that the Rebbe didn't say it.
Yeah, I don't think so. But given that he did, he held the hair of the ideas. You know, and he held these are good ideas. And also, as far as we're concerned, he could learn it as Torah Sruchaim's ideas.
Isn't that a little, like, disheartening, though, that he could do something like that?
No, because he's still logically defining something in a consistent way based on the Gersa.
Right, but he's saying this, like...
You always just do that, though? Like, anything? Smart guy like Rukhaim, just take any...
Well, any if you want, you can go to, like... If you want to go to Rebbe Shira, sometimes he doesn't. He just gives up on problems. If you want to be hardened or the opposite of disheartened, sometimes he gives up.
Gives up.
Yeah, that's what Rebbe said.
Yeah,
he one time said, "If you want to have that experience, some days in Shira, right? Has he done that?"
I can't answer everybody.
Yeah, right. So of course he just doesn't. He tries a few days. Rebbe once told us it was funny. It was very funny. He said, "I don't know if he told me or I don't know if I was there or someone just told me, but." He says that he thinks the days that you gain the most in shir, guys gain the most in his shir, is a day like today or whatever day it was. So basically, like the entire shir, we're just like sitting there quiet, watching Rebbe trying to come up with an answer to the question, and he basically just fails and just like walks out and that's it. I don't know, we don't know. You know, he said that's the best, you know. So he always joked, you know, so when he was joking, I asked him how she was, he says, oh, I gained so much today. It's the best day in shit. I'm like, what do you do? He says, nothing. We're just stuck on the problem all day. You know, but like, we didn't exactly get it. I don't know if he was exaggerating. I don't know if, it's hard to tell. He's exaggerating, but I think he's saying it's like part of, like, I think part of the thing is to realize, like, you gotta work first for an idea, and you don't just, like, there are many times I've had this experience in Rebbe Shira. It's like bothered by a problem. And, like, we have answers. Yeah, I say an answer, I'm gonna say an answer, and he just, like, just doesn't, it's almost like he doesn't hear it, or he hears it, he just doesn't like it, he just doesn't talk to him. And he'll just leave it as Akasha, and he just doesn't know. You know? And, like, he's not, like, just looking to, like, force an answer. Yeah, he's not looking to force an answer. If it's not good, he's not going to take it. You know, there's a lot of things to say, but he's just not going to take it. You know? And he sometimes ends with Akasha, he says, look, I don't know. Sometimes he'll come in the next day and work it out. Sometimes he won't. You know? So, you know? Yeah. It's an honesty, and the idea is, you know, he's willing to say that they say, Reb Chaim said, this is a quote from Reb Chaim, you're not going to, you know, you don't die from Akasha. You know? It's such a thing, it's like part of the Masorah, is, you know, you don't have to answer every, so there is such a thing as, you know, not just saying, you can, look, you're intelligent and creative, you work anything out. I mean, Rebbe, if you see Rebbe Shira, it's definitely the case. He'll work, you know. Sometimes he'll just get stumped and it'll work. That's what I think what Rebbe meant. That's what you gain the most from, like, watching. You see how hard he works to get an idea and how he's not willing to just go for, like, simple answers. And you see the process of, you know. And it's not so much, like, the actual result that you get from, but, like, the process of the working through and trying to, like, you know, you see the intellectual honesty, you see the, like, the process of hard work and, you know, the focus that'll just sit, I don't know, there's something, like, to that experience. You know, sometimes we feel like it's just sort of sitting here waiting for him to come up with an idea, and it's like we don't even know what's bothering him. That's what we joke about. It's like, all right, if you don't, like, see what's bothering him, then it's like, what are we gaining? Like, why don't you say this, Rabbi? No. Like, you know, so it's like, I don't know, but maybe we gain, you know, it's like one of those things, you know, if he's saying that's what you gain the most, then maybe, you know, it just sometimes doesn't feel that way. I don't know if we asked him, maybe we followed it up. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we ask, oh, you mean those days?
Right.
Yeah, we ask him, but, you know, it's very hard to work that out. It's like, look, he doesn't see the idea, this is like, this is such a thing, it's like, you know, it's like you've ever learned with someone lesser than you. You know, a lesser learner, a more beginner learner than you, who's try to say a svara and you just don't like it. And we've had that experience. But, like, what's wrong with it? It's not a good svara. I don't know, what are you going to say? It's just not really clear. It's not real. Like, you could say what's bothering you, but he has answers. Like, there's always answers, you know? So, I don't know. Just sometimes it just doesn't click. So, I mean, based on his intuition, he just doesn't like it. He's reading it differently. He thinks it's hard. He thinks it's forced. This, that, you know. That's, look, sometimes that's just the way it is, you know. Sometimes we don't like his answers, you know. And it's just what part of learning is, you know, the person is right to think and, you know, not everybody, you know.
So what does that intuition mean, then? It's not saying, like, oh, this thing doesn't logically fit.
Yeah, it's just like, is it true? It's like, based upon your, there's a Shikla Das, doesn't that tape? I used to listen to this discussion. It's a good one. Shigla Das. Sure. Discussion 53 or 57. I think. You can check me on it.
I'm 37
pages. Yeah. You can check it.
Is it like an aesthetic thing?
Yes. It's, he basically had this point. I mean, it was about that question. It's like, what is it? But I think he said, it's like thinkers have it in the 90 field. I mean, Bohr and Einstein argued about, you know, quantum. You know, I think he said it's like based upon the experience of a world of experience of ideas. You get a certain intuition. Yeah, it's like a certain appeal, like intellectual appeal. It's like an aesthetic. Yeah, it's like you gain a certain, like, that's what an idea should look like. You know, it's based upon your world of experience of ideas. That's why I think he said it's like you see, for instance, like a Shmuel, it's like a Shmuel Bedini and Krav Visuri. Because Shmuel was an expert in Din, and Rav was an expert in Isser. I mean, they, like, master that area. They put lots of time and energy into that area. And, you know, they had, like, a probing intuition that was, you know, there's such a thing as, like, getting, you're in touch with an area. You know, like, it's like, I mean, I haven't witnessed this myself, but they say Jeremy Koppel is, like, in that with, like, Boba Kama, right? Like, he's, like, that's what he does a lot. He has a certain, like, intuition in that area. There's such a thing as, like, a focus in an area. So I think you build an intuition based upon your experience, you know, the many ideas you've encountered and the different sugyas you've learned, and you start getting a feel for what ideas should sound like. And certain things you just reject as being, that's not right, that's not the way a good idea should sound. You know, and you build up a certain, you know, intuition about that over all your experiences and learning. It's interesting how it works, because you never really have any, like, confirmation of any ideas, but you, somehow you build, like, you know, build the comfort level for the more and more suggas. So, yeah, I think that's just how it goes. Like, your mind combined with your experiences and learning and your intuitions about what's the good ideas. And look, and it's probably very subjective to different people. That's why I think we have machlokas. And so it is subjective. It's different people with different, based on their minds and based of, both based on their minds and based upon their prior experiences and learning. You know?
Point is, it's not pure logic.
Yes, right. Yeah, right. It's not like a pure logical, it's like there's an appeal to an idea. So, like, look, like, logically, like, for instance, you could explain, like, for instance, anything by some ghost theory. You know, there's a ghost which causes this to happen, it causes that to happen, it causes that to happen, you know, and you can't disprove. You can make a lot of theories that cannot be disproven, but they're just ugly. You know, and your mind rejects them. You know, but you can't, like, logically disprove it. You could always come up with an answer. Oh, another ghost did that. Oh, why this? Because this ghost does this. When you turn around, then the ghost hides and do this. You know, so you can have a lot of theories like that, terrible theories, but, like, logically you can't disprove them, like Occam's razor type of thing. You know, they're just, you know, cumbersome bad theories. So just your mind says it's ridiculous. So I could disprove it? No, but it's ridiculous.
Like, a grand example, like, would be like, you say the world was created like 5 seconds ago.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So that throws out, that's a, the, right. the height of it. Because yeah, you can't disprove that, but that throws out all beauty. And
yeah, right. Exactly right. Right, or like the solipsist thing, right? You know, that's like maybe you're dreaming.
Right.
You know, maybe everything's a dream, and it's all part of your dream, and, you know, certain things you just can't disprove. But your mind just says, it rejects it, it's being crazy. It's not a good theory. So different people's minds are different. So that's all you got is your mind, and you gotta use the tools of your mind. But it's, there is, it's interesting, it's subjective, but then there is an objectivity to it, you know. But at the same time, there's also a subjective element to it. So, yeah. So what I'm saying is, just because Rav Chaim could work out an idea based upon a bit different girsa, doesn't mean that he could work out a beautiful idea on any, you know, anything. But it doesn't mean that he could only work it out based upon the regular, you know. It's not, like, unique, but it's not like he could say anything. You know? But it's interesting. Yeah, it is interesting. It's always a little bit bothersome. But where is that? Yehuda showed me that. I don't know if I'd learned into it or not. I think I did a little bit. But there was a place where the Rambam, there was one place where the Rambam actually talked about a Gersa. Like, he had his Gersa from the Gaonim, but he said it's definitely a wrong Gersa. And then the Gemara, it was like a Gersa and a Gemara, but the Rambam was, like, talking about it. Like, well, this is definitely a mistake. With the right Gersa, the wrong Gersa is like,
or the Mishnah
Torah? Yeah, the Rambam the Mishnah Torah himself, in Milvah Velova somewhere, he was, like, talking like that. You know,
that's
good,
too.
What?
That's good, too. Also, you see, he didn't try to, like, come up with some creative idea to explain the
Gersa,
you said
that
Gersa.
Yes. In that case, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, he was working through the, yeah.
My favorite is when my Tosos does it. This can't be. Because
can't be. Yeah, no, there's definitely times where he says that something just can't be. It's impossible. You change Gersa because of it. Certain things just can't be. You don't just accept the... But, I know, it's a little bit funny. I felt uncomfortable doing that with Chaim, personally.
This one.
No, the one where the whole thing was based upon the Gersa, which, you know, look, I guess there's also a question is how much do you trust the modern Gersas and stuff. You know, I think Rebbe's not a big fan of Gersas. You know? I think, like, there's a case where...
So, like, in all of
that,
you feel more any Rebbe?
No, I don't know. I just think, like... Yeah, I know. This. No, when you have a tshuva, you have a tshuva. But, like, this idea of finding the manuscripts and the whatever, and, you know, the Tamani Gersas, and, you know. I think there was a time where he showed, and it was recently the thing, it couldn't be right. There, Gersa just didn't make sense. And he just went with the old one, and the old one made sense. And it's, you know, sometimes, like, they correct them because it didn't make any sense. And the Rama was not infallible. You see, in this case, the Rama changed his size. It's the wrong Gersa, yeah. There is such a thing, it's just because the Taimonides have this Gersa, and in theory the Rambam checked it out or whatever, it doesn't mean that there can't be something which slips through the crack. So there's, the manuscripts have the right Gersa, Yeah, but all the anyone who learned it afterwards changed it because it was wrong. It was a mistake. So it's not so simple just to say what's the right gersa. Although when the Ruch Chaim was dealing with trying to solve a problem, which didn't really make any sense to Rambam, and it turns out it really didn't. It was the wrong gersa. But yeah, Ruch Chaim kind of made sense, you know. But I don't know. Who knows? Sense, you know. Yeah. Who knows? But that's, I think, why you can't force an answer. I mean, I think that's an important call. You can't force farce. If it's not good, it's not good. And maybe it's vague or something. Maybe there is an answer, you just don't know. But I think it shouldn't get into a habit of saying you have to give a svar for every single problem. Such a thing is a problem. It's too hard. Steer in the wrong. Let me give up. You don't know. I don't know. It's a contradiction. I can't work it out. And if you just start having to make up too much stuff in order to give an answer, then maybe better off just, you don't have to give an answer. Yeah, so I think that's Ruch Chaim's line. No, you don't die from kasha. You know, don't force a bad answer because you have a kasha. Look, leave it. Maybe you'll get a good answer one day. Why do you have to give a bad answer and move on? Leave it as a kasha and we'll be pending in the back of your mind as a problem. As opposed to thinking it's resolved when it's not really resolved.
It's a very disciplined point of view.
Yeah, it's true. You close your mind when you solve a problem. Or you think you solve a problem. So you don't keep the same pursuit. Opposed to if you have an open problem, it's like it bothers you at the back of your mind, it's there.
Yeah.
I think it's. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. But I think that doing it still bothered me, just trying to working on that Ruch Chaim where I had in the back of my mind thinking it's like, this whole thing is like, right here, something wrong about it. It's not even a gosh. I remember feeling like Ruch Chaim's like making up all the stuff. It's just not, you know. I mean, what does he know? He thought it was right here, so, but, you know. So, I don't know. But Rebbe did it. I mean, Rebbe didn't seem to really bother him that much. He just did Ruch Chaim, you know. And I think he's trying to figure out how Ruch Chaim learns, anyways, you know. So, he could learn how to think from the thing, anyways. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Questions? No? Okay. So should we stop here? Sounds good.